latent violations in progress, namely the rapid escalation of the already phenomenal level of CIA supply flights to keep the proxy army in the field. Rather, what they typically refer to as the plans of the Reagan administration to request Contra aid. Now, that's an intelligent form of deceit. It makes it appear that the press is balanced, you know, it's criticizing the U.S. government, but it conceals the ongoing actions that are far and away the most serious disruption of the accords, and it refers simply to plans. Well, plans can later be justified by the alleged failures of the reprehensible Sandinistas to comply, of course, as a result of the escalating U.S. attack, which is designed for this purpose. The actual facts are entirely unacceptable to the U.S. government and are therefore were therefore ignored or concealed in the free press. Coming up to more recent times, the New York Times, on January 10th, published its own comprehensive review of the accords in the magazine section. That was January 10th. There were two articles, one by James LeMoyne on the conflict between Arias and his adversary Daniel Ortega. The other was by Stephen Kinzer asking whether Ortega can be trusted. That's the whole issue. Nowhere is there one word in those two articles referring to the actions of the U.S. government to ensure that the accords cannot be fulfilled. Although these actions were by far the most serious violation of the accords, putting in the shade even the very significant violations in the U.S. terror states. Questions about the two U.S. terror states and the client state of Honduras arose only marginally in conformity with State Department priorities. The Times, for example, would not deign to report that Archbishop Rivera y Damas, in early January, Salvadoran Archbishop once again denounced the practice of torture used against many Salvadorans by the death squads, quoting, adding that bishops in several provinces were reporting increased death squad killings and calling for an end to death squad killings and torture. Nor did it report that, according to Western diplomats cited by Reuters on the day of this review, the Contras are hiding in the jungles of Honduras to avoid exposing the government's support for U.S.-funded Contras. However, that kind of suppression is insignificant as compared with the suppression of the violent escalation of the U.S. attack, which is far and away the most serious step that was taken to undermine the possibility that the accords could proceed. Now, coming back to these two articles, we now have New York Times Magazine's survey of the status of the accords, two articles on Nicaragua. LeMoyne gives an account of Arias, Costa Rica's Arias, which is intended to be laudatory, but in fact, if you read it carefully and think about it, depicts Arias as an opportunist and a moral monster who is unconcerned over terror in El Salvador and Guatemala, and is unconcerned over the horrible conditions that persist in Honduras, or the fact that all three states are effectively under military rule backed by the United States, and is unconcerned by the terrorism of the U.S. proxy army attacking Nicaragua. I say proxy army just because I like to use Reagan administration terminology. In internal documents circulated in the White House by Contra supporters, that's what it's referred to as, so let's use that. In LeMoyne's account, Arias's prime concern is that the Contras are, as he puts it, a military Edsel, a failure, so that other methods must be found to pressure the Sandinistas, I'm quoting, to moderate their revolutionary project. Before condemning Arias too severely, we ought to bear in mind that we're seeing Arias as viewed by James Moyne, and his work is notable for its success in filtering reality to reflect state requirements. In this article, LeMoyne refers to José Figueres as correctly as the man who is widely considered the father of Costa Rican democracy. That's used as part of an attack against Nicaragua. But he does not tell us, nor to my knowledge has the U.S. press ever told us, what the father of Costa Rican democracy has actually said about the Sandinistas. For example, the following. I'm quoting him. For the first time, Nicaragua has a government that cares for its people. He said, a surprising amount of support for the government on a recent visit. Nicaragua is an invaded country, and the United States should allow the Sandinistas to finish what they started in peace. They deserve it. Well, comments of that kind lack ideological serviceability, as does Figueres' statement that he understands why La Prensa was closed, having censored the press himself when Costa Rica was attacked by U.S.-backed Somoza government in earlier years. So naturally, Central America's leading democratic figure has to be censored from the free press, as he is. That's one article. We turn to the other one, the companion article by Stephen Kinzer. That denounces Ortega for numerous sins, for example, for running fraudulent elections. That's a staple of U.S. government, hence the free press, always untroubled by fact. Now, as usual, Kinzer cites opposition figures, but also, since he's balanced, he cites one person who he identifies as an old friend of Ortega, and he's permitted to say that Ortega has regressed and no longer reads writers and philosophers, as distinct from Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, who has, you know, which I've adequately surveyed. They represent the entire coverage of the Accords in the magazine section, which is another notable contribution to the state propaganda system. Notice that that conforms precisely to the government agenda. You probably ask them, they're both against contra aid, but that's not the point. The point is they're enforcing the elite consensus, the agenda of those who have power. On the same day, Lemoyne had a front page article reporting, quoting him all the way through, that the prospects for peace in Central America appear bleak, the fault of the Sandinistas, overwhelmingly. Now, for balance, he criticizes the Reagan administration for planning renewed aid for the U.S. guerrillas in Nicaragua. That continues with the standard pretense that the proxy army are guerrillas, and typically suppresses the far more important fact that the administration has acted, not just planned, to disrupt the Accords. He goes on to condemn the Soviet Union for backing Nicaragua's growing army and supporting Marxist guerrillas in the region, offering no evidence for the latter charge, and ignoring the fact that Nicaragua is, after all, under increasing U.S. attack, and that all other sources of aid were consciously blocked by the U.S. pressure. Continuing, he says, both Nicaragua and El Salvador have what he calls civil conflicts. Both of the Times twins constantly refer to this. But El Salvador, he says, is in a stronger position than Nicaragua because it held direct talks with the guerrillas and, I'm quoting, permitted the leaders of the rebel civilian wing to return from exile to hold several public meetings in El Salvador. While he goes on to say, the rebels in El Salvador have enjoyed nearly open access to the press. That's a statement so phenomenal, I won't even comment on it. Neither here nor anywhere has Lemoyne or his colleagues, to my knowledge, ever reported that opposition groups in Nicaragua that openly support the U.S. attack against Nicaragua and openly identify themselves with the Contras function perfectly freely, not requiring an international escort to protect them from assassination on a brief visit and needing no bulletproof vests. And they publish a major journal that's funded by the superpower that's attacking Nicaragua, a journal which openly and explicitly identifies itself with the Contras and serves, that's true in fact, and serves as an instrument of U.S. disinformation in the country. Now this fact, to my knowledge, is entirely without historical precedent. I don't think you can find anything that comes even close to it. Certainly there's nothing in U.S. history, or to take a current case, take, say, Israel, faced with much less of a threat, constantly closing newspapers. In fact, when La Prensa was suspended, Israel closed two newspapers. When La Prensa was opened, Israel closed another newspaper, this one of them in Nazareth, and also closed the Palestinian News Service. The reasons were given, this was just endorsed by the High Court a couple of days ago, goes to the Supreme Court, High Court, and they say, well, we certainly have freedom of expression, but it cannot be used to harm the state of Israel. And no government, they say, will allow a business, however legitimate, that's functioning, that's supported by some hostile power. And the security forces claim without evidence that these journals are supported or related to a foreign power. This is never reported in the United States. I've never seen any report outside of Alex Coburn, who I don't count as part of the United States. And what that shows is that the alleged concern over freedom of the press in Nicaragua is simply a form of total fraud and hypocrisy. It's a form of ideological warfare, just as when some Communist Front organization deplores the human rights violations in the United States and in its domains. Welcoming back to Lemoyne, he states that Nicaragua did not lift its state of siege law, did not offer a full political amnesty, although faced with a similar war. That is a statement that is utterly nonsensical. Faced with a similar war, El Salvador did so. That's a completely deceitful rendition of the actual facts for the reasons I already mentioned, quite apart from the fact that the Salvadoran amnesty was in explicit violation of the terms of the accords and has been bitterly condemned by human rights groups who have repeatedly called for it to be rescinded. Continuing with Lemoyne, particularly damaging for Nicaragua, he goes on, are the Miranda revelations, which he misrepresents, claiming falsely, I'm quoting him, that the Sandinistas defend the government's right to form a large army and to assist rebel groups in El Salvador. A total lie. Most interestingly, Lemoyne goes on to quote Elliot Abrams, who insists that Nicaragua must be held the most responsible for the treaty's lack of success. You'll notice that that's an order that's loyally followed by Lemoyne and his Times colleagues, and in fact the Free Press generally. Well, a closer look at these triumphs of voluntary totalitarianism is actually instructive. Notice that there's a unanimous agreement among our near unanimous agreement among articulate elites in the United States that Nicaragua must not obtain the means to defend its territory from the CIA supply flights that are required to keep the U.S. proxy army in the field. I might add that the question of illegal U.S. surveillance flights, which are required to coordinate contra-attacks, enabling them to evade the Nicaraguan army and attack what are called soft targets in accordance with State Department orders, that's far beyond the possibility of discussion in the free press. Now, all of this is extremely clear, and it's a very revealing fact. It teaches us a lot about our political culture. It's well understood that to defend its territory from constant U.S. attack, Nicaragua must obtain jet interceptors. There's no other way. And therefore, no one familiar with the U.S. political culture would be surprised at all to discover that the most severe charge against the Sandinistas, the ultimate proof that they must be destroyed, is the allegation that they're attempting to obtain such aircraft. Any indication that Nicaragua might be attempting to obtain vintage 1950s jet planes from the Soviet Union, the United States having blocked all other sources of supply, that elicits almost hysterical outrage. In fact, what's happening is that Nicaragua is threatening to defend its own territory against U.S. attack, and it's an unchallengeable principle of U.S. doctrine that the United States must be free to attack any country that it likes, and it's intolerable, an unspeakable scandal, if not outright aggression, for any country, however weak, to defend itself, to try to defend itself from U.S. attack.